You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Brought to you by North Memorial Health, where customers are treated like family. That means a big smile when you walk in the door and making sure your visit is as pleasant as possible. Just like your family treats you, find your health family at northmemorial.com/family.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Purple Daily.
All I care about is winning, man. Everybody know that. I want to win. Straight up. Now, I excuse my language, but everybody know that. That's who I am. That's that passion, that fire, that heart. That's what y'all love. And I'm going to continue giving that as long as I'm here.
My favorite part is, excuse my language, but
bleep.
That was Jalen Ramsey in one of the more bizarre press conferences I can remember recently. Today, he went up to the podium and just swore constantly and at times refused to answer questions about him demanding a trade, and at other times was fairly open about him demanding a trade. It was something extremely unique with Jalen Ramsey. And we were just talking before you got here, ESPN's Courtney Cronin, Matthew Collar with you on Purple Daily. We were just talking about players taking their futures into their hands and how it's a messy process, but a lot of players are recently more interested in doing this. And the most recent is Jalen Ramsey demanding a trade after a messy situation on the sideline with Doug Marrone the other day. I too do not want to work with Doug Marrone. So I get
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you and him can commiserate over that.
I did. It wasn't fun. So what do you make of not only Jalen Ramsey and his bizarre press conference, but also NFL players becoming more like the NBA? NFL players saying, you know what, if I got to sit out, I got to sit out because I've got the cash in my wallet. So I'll just wait until my contract runs out or until you are forced to move on from me. This was, you know, who was ahead of his time with this was Carson Palmer. Did this years ago, and then it kind of went away, and now we're seeing lots of players do it. What do you think?
Well, the players who do have the money, because we know contracts are not full, most contracts are not guaranteed in the NFL. So until you have that leverage, you can't do what a Jalen Ramsey is trying to potentially do. You can't pull a Le'Veon Bell. Melvin Gordon really can't do that if we're wanting to make this like a more topical thing, because he was not franchise tagged. He wasn't in the same situation. There's only a few guys in certain situations that can do this.
Right. Melvin might not be good enough.
Yeah.
Or valuable.
Valuable enough for sure. Yeah. I just think it's kind of interesting though, because we've seen players, like you can't force somebody to want to play for you. You can't force guys just because of the situation with contracts, and the way that the league is structured to want to stay in a crappy situation. I mean, we heard the stuff, about the Dolphins, and we've certainly Minka Fitzpatrick, but even before that, after that first loss, you heard about, okay, guys are reaching out to their agents trying to get out of here. And then we see it take place with Minka Fitzpatrick going to the Steelers and that trade coming through this morning. But Jalen Ramsey, I mean, I feel like this was kind of the bubble that was waiting to burst, because there's been several instances before in Jacksonville where he's shown he's unhappy. You have to be in the right situation, though, to be able to voice these demands. And he said that he didn't leak it. His agent didn't leak it. I was arguing with somebody on Twitter being like, you know, why are you upset that they're doing a press conference? It's transparency. It's this, that, and the other thing. That isn't transparent. He didn't say blank. Like, if I'm going to go ahead and, like, take a Jalen Ramsey, where he didn't say beep. Like, But it
was more weird than it was insightful.
You know what it reminded me of, just from like the PR standpoint, because I always look at this stuff through the lens of crisis communication, because I have a little bit of a background in that from my time at the NCAA. Awkward things like this, where they think they're doing the player a favor by saying, hey, let's get out in front of it. Let's get out ahead of the headlines that are going to happen, the speculation, the questions, et cetera, et cetera. A few instances I can remember, oddly, after Auburn fired Gene Chizik, I want to say it was in 2013, they invited him back for a press conference. I believe the Vikings did that with Mike Tice. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. I know Judd would know for sure. After he was fired, and it's just like when players are in these precarious situations where you have a chance to clear things up and you don't, because Jalen Ramsey said, I don't want to be a headline. I know you guys are writing. I don't want to be your headline. Well, this information's out there. Like, either you want to be traded or you don't. You could have squashed and said, I do not want to be traded. It's clearly real information. And he won't talk about it. And the whole thing is weird to me, because as you and I were texting this morning, as this nonsense was going on, I'm watching the Periscope stream laughing to myself. What if this were to happen here in Minnesota? And the example I brought up was, remember all the awkward rumors this summer, like this offseason, like St. Patrick's Day, Trayvon Diggs, Stephon's brother, had retweeted or tweeted out a photo of Stephon in a Redskins jersey. Mm-hmm. I remember Adam Schefter tweeted out something that, like,
I think it actually included a bleep.
It definitely included the F word. Like from a Vikings official. And I kind of wonder, like, if that actually surfaced, if things went downhill here this season with the passing game. I mean, the running game's one thing, but if Kirk Cousins' struggles are really taking out two of the top receivers in the game, and if they get angry or antsy or want to get out of here and voice that and it gets out, would the Vikings handle that in the same way? Because I could tell a lot of frustration in Jalen Ramsey's voice without him actually saying much of anything at all. And I tend to think, like, a Stephon Diggs situation, just because I'll use that since we've had examples of the trade rumors before. No one's ever talked about trading Adam Thielen, so I won't go there. I wonder how they would handle that, and I wonder if Diggs... if it was the same type of situation, how that would play out.
So Diggs is the right answer if you were asking which Minnesota Viking player, if this went sideways. I mean, let's say that this line cannot pass block and Cousins just struggles the whole year. Because last year they couldn't pass block either, but they did find some ways to deal with it and produced, as it's been said many times, 4,000 yards, 30 touchdowns, and all that. It wasn't a great season, but their pass blocking right now is worse. Mm-hmm. And it's really impacting Cousins, and I think it will impact him more and more and more unless they find a solution to it super fast. And even this week, it's not like they're playing jokers. They're playing Jonathan Hankins and PJ Hall, who can play football. And if they're going to put pressure, it's going to be a problem all year long, and then they go to Chicago. And so looking up and down the roster for the Vikings and the contracts, if you said, well, who would be the one player who would say, okay, get me out of here? The reason it would be Stephon Diggs in my mind is because he has been part of a duo for now several years. And by lots of metrics, whether it's the people who track route running or Pro Football Focus or whichever,
he's the better of the two.
He's either the better of the two or definitely a clear-cut number one wide receiver, does not have to be part of a duo to be a superstar.
And there will be people who will argue with you that Adam Thielen is that guy, too. And I think that on certain teams, yes. But with Diggs, people you talk to behind the scenes that actually know football and know how this whole thing works, it's without a question, gun-to-your-head type situation. You got to pick one or push one off the cliff. It's going to be Stephon Diggs. And I think, given his age, he's 25 years old, so he is in the crux of his prime right now with several years ahead of him. If there was a situation of somebody who wasn't happy, I think he's got a legitimate case, assuming this plays out kind of similarly to what it's been the first 2 weeks. There are a lot of teams who need a number one receiver, and he's part of a duo right now that isn't even being used effectively. And that's got to cause frustration among both of them.
Right. I mean, when you're talking about Delvin Cook now being the centerpiece.
Yeah.
And this is what we do see in the NBA. And again, I don't blame anybody for feeling this way, but with someone like Kyrie Irving, he was constantly in the shadow of LeBron James. So now if you're Stephon Diggs and you believe that you are every bit as good as top five wide receivers and you don't get quite the targets that you think you should be getting. And then they're taken away even more because your head coach says, no, 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 we got to run. We actually have to run more. In fact, let's run all the time because my quarterback might underthrow Stephon Diggs in the back of the end zone and turn into an interception. So the head coach is terrified to pass the ball. The offensive line can't block, and the two elite wide receivers are being underutilized, but Adam Thielen is just not leaving Minnesota, right?
No.
I mean, he is a Minnesota guy. He's from here. He's got the house. He's got the whole thing. He's got the charity set up and everything else. It would be beyond stunning if Adam Thielen ever wanted to go. But if there was a player that wanted to leave because it was going sideways and he didn't like the direction and he didn't like the way the quarterback was playing either, that would be Diggs. And the frustration in his voice after
Sunday
was something that I don't think I've ever seen from him. I mean, he could barely talk.
His voice was shaky.
Yeah.
And I remember listening back to it. It was incredibly hard to discern, which, again, I can bring it up here. I remember there was a quote from him. He was asked about the interception, and nobody ended up using it. And we'll give you some context on this, too. Let me find it. You know, it was very, very difficult for him to verbalize just how upset he was about the way the game turned out. And with the interception, it was just asked, like, what did you think? What happened on the interception? What did you think of it? He said, that's terrible. So just to be clear, we have no clue whether he's talking about, like, the interception, the pick, what happened, what he was responsible for, the play calling, whether it was Kirk. And then it was kind of an inaudible, like, I remember I transcribed this and I wrote for the group, inaudible. I do not want to infer something that he may or may not have meant. But what was clear was trying to make something happen for late in the game. And that's the type of player he is. I mean, you listen to how much he's had Kirk Cousins back in moments where he probably doesn't even need to. And yes, you're a teammate. You don't want to go rogue. You don't want to turn this locker room upside down this early in the season. But when he's talking about that pass where Kirk threw to him in quadruple, like four guys around him, that's on me. I had an early one, the slant. I should have caught that 100%. I take full responsibility for my actions always. And that's just Kirk having faith in me. You just have to find a way to make a play for him and find a way to always have his back because bleep ain't going to come out perfect all the time. I think patience will wear thin eventually. I mean, he's been a very good teammate. He is constantly, you think about him and Adam Thielen arguing about route running in Kirk's route running clinic in the Chicago game. Who's on there in the sideline going, that's on me.
Yeah.
Throw the ball to me. Give me a chance.
Yeah.
Diggs is doing that, and I think it's honestly wearing very thin on him.
This in camp, too.
Yes, I wonder how much longer or what it's going to take for that to bubble over to where you have a situation where it needs to be addressed some way. And I'm not speculating saying that there are trade rumors or anything like that, but the Jalen Ramsey thing kind of brings it into the forefront thinking, okay, you're not happy in a situation. Somebody clearly, maybe it's not you, maybe it's not your agent, but somebody put that information out there because you wanted it out there because it helps you get shopped around and helps teams know, hey, he said he wants to go to a place that, or we're hearing he wants to go to a place where there's no state income tax. Well, there's a few teams that might be able to fit him onto the roster and under the salary cap, those type of things.
So the point on Diggs is just that what you have in the league now is when people aren't happy with their situations, that they try to make an effort to change them.
Mm-hmm.
And with this Vikings team, and we felt this way in years past about it sort of teetering, and then in 2017, it teetered when Sam Bradford got hurt, and then they had the bad game against Pittsburgh, and then they win in Chicago, and it goes completely the other direction, and they win and win and win and win. And that could very well happen this year, that they have this sort of come-together moment after Green Bay, they kill Oakland, they go get a big win in Chicago, and if they were to get a big win in Chicago in Week 4, you could see that springboarding this team to win the NFC North, get the 11 wins that you threw out there, come together, love each other like we saw in 2017, have a great locker room. That's definitely an outcome that could happen to this Minnesota Vikings team. The other one is this turns into Jacksonville last year, where they made the AFC championship game. They blew it. Doug Marrone mismanaged the end of that game, and Tom Brady came back on them and won. And then they all came back, and everyone said, no, 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 it'll be fine. We'll just run Blake Bortles out there again, and it'll be all right. We'll be totally fine. We have a great defense. And they completely fell apart. And now you have players in Jacksonville namely Jalen Ramsey, saying, okay, get me out of here, because this thing is going sideways. And I think it's plausible to say that we could have something similar with the Vikings if the quarterback continues to perform like this, that they will look at this situation, some players, and say, oh, this is not what I signed up for you guys to give all the cap space to this one player who's going to throw the game away at the end.
And look at like a situation like Anthony Barr, who turned down millions more dollars to go somewhere else on a team that definitely has, you know,
he's feeling good today, worse fate than
the Vikings. But, you know, you got to think members of this defense, too, for all that they did, like they made adjustments on Sunday after getting annihilated on those first three drives where the Packers score on, you know, as like 68 yards, 75 yards, and 38 yards, just gashed, completely gashed. They fixed their problems, and they've got to be looking at the offense saying, hey, outside of Dalvin, why can't you guys do the same thing we do and fix it? And I know that we're going to get into that in the show with play calling and what, you know, the notion out there. And my Twitter has been very toxic the last few days with people saying, well, why are you paying this guy $84 million to be a game manager? Why are you paying a guy that you can't trust to make one throw in the red zone? That's a topic that we'll get to. But this type of stuff, this boiling pot is very close, I think, probably closer than most people realize, to going over. Because they got their taste of it last year in realizing in big moments when Kirk Cousins couldn't come through. Now that this might be the last year, really, the last year you can keep this core together, because you have high cap hits in 2020. Kirk's hit is very, very high itself. Guys are getting older, and you're going to be thinking of cutting pieces and moving on. It's the whole notion of if you don't do it this year, this might be your last chance. And the fact that it's starting out like this against a Green Bay team that's probably, I mean, I'd say top 13. Like, I'm going to say it's not the greatest team that's playing this year. But if you can't get it done against a good team like a Green Bay, what's going to happen when you have the Eagles come in here in October? What's going to happen when you have to go to Kansas City and Dallas in back-to-back weeks? Frustrating.
That is another point I want to get to, probably in the next segment. But to your point, we have felt around the building since, I mean, even the day that Kevin Stefanski was announced as the offensive coordinator, and he gave a very odd press conference.
Because Mike Zimmer was staring at him the entire time. How would you feel if you were doing something and I was your boss? Because, let's be real, like, I am.
It's true.
How would you feel if I'm sitting like 5 inches from you and just like glaring at you the entire time? I know you wrote about it in your story that day. I mean, that kind of set the tone.
And Zimmer barked at the media. Actually, he was mad at a reporter who wasn't even there, but he barked at the media at the end of that press conference. And I did write, like, this is emblematic of just how much pressure is on everyone. And even when we talked to Mark Wilf, he was asked, of course, what's the expectation for this year? And the answer is, it's very, very high. It's clear that the Wilfs feel like you've spent all this money on the performance center. You spent all this money on the quarterback. We gave you Gary Kubiak. I'm sure he didn't come cheap. We've done all these things for you. And if it comes short, then there are going to be ramifications. But I think that we've mostly focused on the ramifications for the coach and the general manager and haven't so much thought about players who could do similar things to what we see around the NFL now. And we picked Diggs because his situation kind of makes sense. I mean, I can't think of anybody. I haven't heard anything about that, to be clear
about that, it's the only one on offense that makes sense. I think defensively, I don't know anybody who would really have a ground to stand on. Unless it was Anthony Barr, because he came back. Yeah,
and clearly he wants to be here.
He's a lifer.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, and Danielle Hunter's just not that way. Like, he's not a guy who
chokes on chicken bones when you interview him.
That was not my fault.
He
had a great game, though. So I can't.
Great game and a great quote and a good story.
I was talking to him the other day, and he nearly choked to death. And I can't give a Heimlich maneuver on a man that large.
No.
Like, I don't even. How hard would you have to press on his chest to get through all the muscle? To like even
when you
bring
get
him back to
maneuver,
life.
If you're really doing it correctly, that and CPR, you're supposed to break their ribs. Can you imagine being the one who broke Danielle Hunter's ribs?
I think I'd lose my credential.
Man, we went off the rails here.
Yeah, you may have saved his life, but you broke his ribs. He's out this week, so you're done covering this team. So let's come back and let's continue the conversation here. Alex Boone is going to join us at 3, and we're going to talk about this pass protection, which has not been protecting Kirk Cousins at all. So we'll be right back. Matthew Collar, ESPN's Courtney Cronin. Here you're listening to Purple Daily on Score North.
North Memorial Health has over 400 care providers. That's right, more than 400 care providers and more than 6,000 team members that are dedicated to keeping you healthy. North Memorial Health is proud to partner with the Minnesota Vikings as they work to make Minnesota the healthiest in the league. They're more than a team at North Memorial Health. They're your family. At North Memorial Health, customers are treated like family. Your health family is more than a tagline. It's a commitment to delivering unmatched customer service. That means a big smile when you walk in the door. That means making sure your visit is as pleasant as possible. It means asking, what else can we do for you? North Memorial Health will treat you like family in a good way. The people at North Memorial Health will team up with you to help you achieve your best health. So step up your healthcare game today and find your health family at northmemorial.com/family. Once again, that's northmemorial.com/family.
Do you think you want to be a distraction? Do you think you are being a distraction in a short week with a game coming up?
Let's be clear about something in regards to that. I didn't leak that information. Me and my agent, we are not the ones who leaked that information. And I was very strict about that because I did not want it to get out. And I didn't want it to be a distraction. I didn't want everybody asking my teammates all type of questions throughout the week. So let me be real clear about that. I was not the one, me and my team, we were not the one to leak that information because I thought about my teammates. I thought about stuff like that. So y'all need to ask the other side or whoever.
Jalen Ramsey there accusing the Jacksonville Jaguars of leaking that he demanded a trade out of Jacksonville. So we were discussing before about the Vikings, if there's any chance they end up ever soon, if things start to go sideways in a situation where players are asking out. I kind of doubt it, but if Kirk Cousins continues to play this way, then it does become possible. So let's talk a little bit about Kirk there in Sunday. He comes out and he says, it's my fault. I was bad. I was wrong. And you go through his career, it's very rare that you're going to find a game that he ever played that poorly by whatever metric you use.
If we're looking at completion percentage alone, the last time it was that bad was before he was a full-time starter. It was like a 20-6 loss to the Giants in 2013.
Yeah.
And it was very, very similar to the 43.75% completion percentage.
Yeah, and PFF grades, QBR, mm-hmm. everything. This is legitimately one of Kirk Cousins' worst games. Now, the protection has become quite an issue for the Minnesota Vikings, too. And I guess here's what I'm wondering about, Courtney, is, you know, when you look at the way that this team was constructed around Kirk Cousins with the two receivers, and they draft a first-round lineman, they draft a tight end who I thought had a good week one. We broke it down last week with Irv Smith, but he has, one catch through 2 weeks. So just as we predicted throughout training camp, this is not the game-changing
weapon. Not a plug-and-play
weapon.
Guy.
Right, exactly. It's not like, oh, he's going to get 40 or 50 catches and be a complete game-changer. I mean, where are we at with Kirk? Like, is it... I got a tweet today with someone asking me, like, should they go out and find a better backup quarterback?
Oh, goodness. I know, just in case
they have to bench Kirk Cousins halfway through the season.
How many tweets did you get about the one that was just let go?
Can we do, like, I'm trying to come up with some sort of pie chart for you here of, like, what percentage of the reaction is definitely overreaction? What is realistic? Like, where should we stand after that thing? I mean, is that worth saying, oh my gosh, this is the biggest bust contract ever. This guy is a disaster. He's never, ever going to win a big game ever in his life. Or should we say, look, it's week two. The rules haven't even been figured out yet by the referees. And maybe everybody R-E-L-A-X, right? Like, where do you go with that?
I think that I'm more on the other side of this is what you're going to get. Because it's 8 years now of him in the NFL, five as a starter. You can talk about next level. You can talk about scheming around him, which they failed. I'm sorry. They failed to do that on that final play or the play that really solidified the end of the game for them. Let me just say, because I've been stressing out about this as I've been thinking about things about writing and all this other stuff. Kevin Stefanski and Gary Kubiak were more than aware of Kirk Cousins' red zone struggles, which have not really changed. Like, I have some stats that I was looking at, and I was yelling about with somebody. Like, his red zone numbers looked okay last year. Well, why? Because they didn't make it into the red zone that many times. So, I mean, it, of course they're skewed. Of course he's got, you know, only a he was only off target on 10.6% of throws in the red zone last year. Like, big picture-wise, he is not a good quarterback in the red zone. Kevin Stefanski and Gary Kubiak were well aware of that. So why, when you know he's been struggling and wildly inaccurate for the most of the game, besides the Diggs throw, the 45-yard touchdown, besides some other things, why would you put the game, when you're when you have two, you know, Dalvin Cook and Alexander Mattison to a degree, when you are relying on the run game to get it done, why in the game's most critical moment do you take it out of their hands and say, hey, Kirk, here's one shot? Like, why would you do that? That's my thing when we talk about, is this the best of Kirk Cousins? You exposed him right there. Like, I'm not going to say that play calling is totally the blame, but I think you exposed him and you set him up for failure there. Yes, he should make not make that throw. Yes, he should throw it away. But you have to put him in a, you were hired to put him in a situation, to put him in multiple situations just to get by. That's all you're trying to do is get by with him. And they failed at doing that on Sunday.
So I agree with you on that. And I think that it tells you probably where you should stand on Kirk Cousins is if you can't, if we all walk away from that feeling like, how could you trust Kirk Cousins with the football in that situation? Then that tells you everything you need to know.
And I don't think they do.
And that people on the sideline don't trust him in that situation. Kirk revealed that people on the sideline said, why didn't we run? Why didn't we run? Well, teams that have Drew Brees on their squad as their quarterback or Tom Brady never say, why didn't we run? I mean, aside from Seattle at the 1 yard line with beast mode. I mean, you're almost never going to run into this when you have an elite quarterback of why didn't we run unless it was a really egregious example. And most teams can totally throw in that spot and have nothing to worry about. But I think it just says something about the way that we've come to view Kirk Cousins because of how he performs in big situations and big games. So I started to look at this last night, Courtney, and I made quite a finding. So we talk about sometimes how things play out and the role that luck goes into your success or failure as a team throughout a season. And so I see this from, I don't know, Bleacher Report had this. The bad quarterback luck throughout this year. Andrew Luck retires. Eli Manning is benched. Sam Darnold has mono. Nick Foles broke his collarbone. Drew Brees tore a thumb ligament. Cam Newton looks horrible on his foot injury.
And now we find out today it's more serious.
And why they played him, I have no idea, but typical sort of Ron Rivera in Carolina. And Ben Roethlisberger done for the year. You notice something about all those quarterbacks?
Vikings aren't playing any of them.
Not a single one. Zero luck. Every quarterback left on the Vikings schedule is their starting quarterback. And I was looking at this through another lens, too. The primetime games where Kirk Cousins struggled, there are several, and several against very good teams. There are plenty of NFC North matchups still remaining. They have to play Kansas City on the road. So 10 of their final 14 games this year are either NFC North, primetime, or Patrick Mahomes. If Kirk Cousins is clutch, and if he's going to show up in big games, then he's going to have every opportunity on this earth to show us the way that the schedule is laid out.
I agree. And I just, the skeptic in me, though, the person who's seen this now play out for a year and two games, doesn't believe that it's going to end up a happy story here. I just think that when you see Kirk in those moments, like, that was a no-brainer. You know that. He even said it himself. He called it, that's day one stuff. The decision you made not to just, like, launch it to the sideline, to the right of your shoulder, like, just throw it there, like, that's processing. That is the mental part of the game that he lacks. That's thinking slowly. It's not being able to make a clear judgment call when the game's on the line. So if you're really expecting this team to beat elite opponents, including going to Chicago in 2 weeks, you know, if they can right the ship here, essentially, against the Raiders, get back above 500, 2-1, go to Chicago. If you're not running the ball in Chicago with Dalvin Cook or making him the focal point and taking the game out of Kirk Cousins' hands, then you're asking to lose. Like, it's so clear to me that they know the limitations of this guy, and Mike Zimmer bit his tongue And I'm kind of wondering, when is the moment that the quarterback is going under the bus? Because he had every chance to do that. And he was pretty tight-lipped in Green Bay and again on Monday, saying, you know, he needs to play within himself and he knows he needs to throw that ball away there, and they're coaching him hard and, you know, well, he can do better. Can he do better, Matt? I don't know. Well, like, I'm not trying to be a jerk here, but can he do better?
How Zimmer handles it, sure. For sure. Okay, I want you to do something.
Oh, God, do I have a pie chart I have to do?
No. I know, I'm holding the notepad, but this is for me this time.
Triggered
Ramp
me.
Up NFL Films music for this. This is special. Here's what I want you to do. You have 2/16, otherwise known as 1/8, of the schedule completed for the Minnesota Vikings.
I have to project it
you
now?
You have to predict the rest of the season. You have to do it now because I already tweeted it out.
They have one win
and one loss. After week one, you would have picked them to go 11-5 still. After week two, I don't want you to aim for that, for the original 11-5.
I want you to just pick it.
Whatever comes to your mind, win, loss for the Minnesota Vikings, knowing what you know about the team through 2 weeks. All right, here we go. September 22nd, a Sunday at home against Oakland.
I'll go ahead and give them a win this week. Because it's going to be the bounce back game, and everybody's going to be like, look, you were wrong about Kirk.
You know what? I'll tell you, after Sunday's game, I got no, like, it was the line's fault, and it kind of was.
I got no
Kirk excuses, and that's where I know that the fans have really started to lose hope.
And they're turning, because...
Because they should be yelling at me when I criticize Kirk Cousins, and it's almost like... if they go quiet, it's scary.
And they should have been yelling more about play calling, and they didn't, because they expect him to make that throw.
You're right.
Loss in Chicago.
Okay, that's at Chicago. Akeem Hicks plays there. At New York with Daniel Jones.
Defense wins that game.
Okay, so 3-2.
Eagles loss.
All right. Then you have Detroit on the road.
On the road, they're losing. They are splitting with Detroit. Detroit is better this year. Confident in that.
National TV game, the first of our year, will come on October 24th against the Washington Football Squad, and I don't know who at quarterback. Dwayne Haskins, maybe?
Dwayne Haskins, probably.
Colt McCoy?
Win.
Okay. All right. At KC and Patrick Mahomes.
Loss.
That's the loss. At Dallas. And
loss
Dak
at Dallas.
Is just
Dak is
rolling.
2-0. I don't know what universe I live in with the Cowboys as good as they are right now, and everything else is upside down.
At some point, I want to. I'm waiting with him and Lamar Jackson to be like, nailed it! But like, you know, when people would say, I'd rather take Kirk than Dak. Like, no. All right, anyway.
He was also a fourth round pick.
He was. Denver, November 17th.
Close one. It's a win.
That's a win. All right.
Maybe not coming down to a field goal.
Bye week, and then they go on the road the Monday night in Seattle on December 2nd.
That'll be a loss.
All right. Detroit.
At home, they'll win.
That's a win. All right. At L.A.
They'll beat the Chargers. The Chargers did not look good.
No, they didn't.
Against, they have a lot of injuries, too. I mean, who knows if like those guys will be back by then, but right now, I'll say that's a win.
That secondary is a problem.
It's being really hurt. Bad.
Derwin Jamesing out kills them. Green Bay. Week 16. Here.
The way that they made the adjustments against Aaron Rodgers on, you know, the screen game stunk after that first play. The play action game was not effective after, like, the first few series. I'll go ahead and say they beat Green Bay at home on Monday Night Football on Christmas Eve.
Week 17, you have December 29th,
Chicago.
Sunday, noon o'clock.
I have a time limit on this.
You know, we're actually supposed to take a break in like a minute and a half, 2 minutes. So yeah, you can take your time. We just listen to the music.
Go ahead and put it down as a win. I'm not counting cards here. I just think that at some point, I mean, Trubisky has regressed poorly.
Yeah. And I don't think that Matt Nagy is.
And here's my thing, though: a game like what happened on Sunday, that will haunt you when you're looking towards the playoff. If you're 9-7 at that point, and you need 10-6 to get to the wild card, that game from Sunday is going to hurt you.
Uh-huh.
So where am I at?
You're at 9-7.
Okay.
So you went from thinking the Vikings were an 11-win team to being a 9-win team, and
you know what? 9-7 might get you the wild card, and it might get you the division because this division is very hard, and there is a, you know, it's parity for a change. There's not a big drop off.
They're really tough teams, but they're also really flawed teams in the NFC North, and it's weird because Detroit doesn't even look that bad. I mean, Detroit is just inches away in Arizona, I mean, they botched that one for sure, but I mean, they're that close to being a 2-0 team. Detroit is at this moment, and I don't even know what to expect from them going forward. I don't know if Trubisky gets it back together or if Matt Nagy's kind of a one-year wonder Chip Kelly kind of coach who had some creativity in 1 year and then everyone figures it out. And that Green Bay team, Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur could be a powder keg, and that could blow up at some point. So very, very interesting, the NFC North to track from week to week. But 9-7 is probably where I would go after that as well.
And realistically, I know I said this off air, when I was going through the schedule, when you're thinking, when you don't have the guise of optimism and, hey, they haven't screwed anything up yet, and, hey, there's no injuries, 9-7 is, with Kirk Cousins as quarterback, that's what I tend to think of.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what I tend to think of. That is who he is.
Yep.
And I mean, obviously, you can't like manufacture losses without having any real reason to do so. But if I'm playing the hindsight game, of course I would have put them at 9-7 in April, because I just feel like the moments that we saw on Sunday are more common than not with Kirk Cousins throughout his career.
Mm-hmm.
Red zone is one thing, but those type of game on the line moments where the processing and just the mental errors of the quarterback.
It won't be the last one.
No, they don't, but they could make it the last one. If Dalvin Cook can stay healthy, and if they can actually scheme an entire 60 minutes with him in mind and not say, hey, we've, you know, for 96% of the game, we've relied on the run game. How about this one play we give Kirk Cousins? Just go air it out on the first one.
Boy, this feels like they're treating him like Tim Tebow.
It's kid gloves for an right? $84 million quarterback.
The way we're talking about this guy is like how they talked about Tim Tebow with Denver. Like, maybe if he makes one throw downfield in a game.
But it's just, you know, it's the cards you're dealt. And I think that when fans talk about this and they get frustrated, you're stuck with it. They're not going to cut him. They're not going to go find somebody else right now to complete the rest of the season. This is what you're stuck with. And can I tell you it's going to get better? I'm not really sure it is.
Okay, let's take a break. I have Turbo Snark from last night.
Oh.
So we'll be right back. Alex Boone joins the show at 3 o'clock, and he's going to fix the offensive line. He promised me. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Purple Daily on Score North.
Football fans, it's Mackie here for Federated Insurance. You might not know this about me, but I've been a business owner a couple different times in my life. I can relate to the roller coaster ride, the never-ending sea of problems to solve, the exhilaration of those incremental wins. If you're a business owner, I recommend getting to know Federated, which has over a century of experience in protecting businesses and making them as successful as they can be. You want a company like Federated standing behind your business. Visit federatedinsurance.com to find your local representative. Federated Mutual Insurance Company. It's our business to protect yours.
Jonathan Harrison here. Time for the Score North download. This download powered by Modest Brewing Company. We're going to use it to remind you that the countdown to the Medtronic Twin Cities Marathon weekend is on. It's not too late to sign up for the TC 10K, TC 5K presented by Fredrickson and Byron, or the Medtronic TC family events featuring races for kids of all ages. To learn more or sign up, visit tcmevents.org or visit scorenorth.com, keyword auction or keyword marathon. Also, the Score North fall auction is underway with great items up for grabs on home improvement, travel, heating and cooling, and much more. To view all the items and place your bid, visit scorenorth.com, keyword auction. If you are going to a Twins game, check out Modest Brewing, located only two blocks from the Target Field station. Modest is known for serving a wide variety of one-of-a-kind, super drinkable craft beers. For a full price or full menu of craft beers, go to modestbrewing.com. That's when your Score North download. Now back to Purple Daily.
The ball's out, he's sacked. And the Packers come up with it. The fumble recovery on the sack of Cousins. Cousins throws a Hail Mary. Kevin King, did he come up with it?
The run on the field is an interception.
I can't believe that Cousins would throw that ball.
I mean, this is exactly the same thing that Mitchell Trubisky did last Thursday night. There's no reason to throw it.
Okay, back here on Purple Daily, and something that I want to start doing, and I noticed the internet has already caught on, as I shared with you last night, Jonathan, is that when we get to Monday, Tuesday, early in the week, reacting to what happened over the weekend and Monday Night Football, is if we have the opportunity, throw in some Turbo Snark.
Floor.
All right, Turbo Snark time.
It was a great idea
to hire Adam Gase after he had no clue where he was in the initial press conference, and after he revealed that he didn't want your star running back to get paid any money, and after he got your general manager fired and hired Greg Williams, a legitimate psychopath. No, I'm sure that was going to go great, Jets. No one could have ever seen it coming that you would be one of the biggest truck fires in the entire league. Not at all. Adam Gase, genius. Peyton Manning said so. There's mine. You got one?
Not like that. I wasn't really prepared.
Oh, you could try. You're a snarky person.
Yeah, I am. I definitely can throw some shade. Can I criticize the play calling?
Sure. I mean, it's Turbo Snark.
Turbo. I mean, mine's not nearly
the biggest thing about Turbo Snark is that you're not responsible for any of it. So if like
so I can black out right now and
if the Jets somehow win the Super Bowl and then of course like Twitter comes back like, "Oh, you snarked about the Jets." Like it was Turbo Snark. It doesn't count.
Kirk Cousins is who the Vikings thought he is. He is a bad quarterback in the red zone. Notoriously known for the mistakes and the gaffes that he made in Washington, year by year, his numbers got worse. He came here hoping to fix it in 2018, talked big game about with working on it with John DeFilippo, finding new targets to throw to, never threw to Kyle Rudolph in the red zone, which was supposed to be his mattress. And then this year, in the most critical point of the Green Bay game, and I would even argue that this wasn't even the most egregious throw that he made against the Packers, his coaches put him in a situation that said, "Hey, go win a game for us right now." And what did he do? Not that. Not that at all. And so I think that this is kind of the underlying thing that no one is talking about. Gary Kubiak and Kevin Stefanski deserve just as much blame as Kirk Cousins for that moment. They set him up. They put him in a situation where play action, yes, that's his strength, but you also know what this guy does when he gets inside either 20-yard line. He messes up. He throws interceptions. How many times did this happen last year? I'm thinking of the Chicago game off the top of my head on the slant route for Diggs where they have a chance to try to pitch a comeback and he throws that second pick of the game.
Yeah.
So I don't really see how you can get away with saying you guys were great with the run, 198 yards as a team. Dalvin Cook's having a career day.
Destroyed him on that drive.
And you literally took, seven of the eight plays in that drive were runs, including a quarterback, six-yard quarterback scramble. You took it out. You shot yourselves in the foot there. No one stopped the effectiveness of the Vikings' run game except themselves. And play calling should come into to under the microscope there. Going forward, I hope you think about that when you are in the same situation, because you know it's going to happen again at some point this year, and realize the weaknesses of your quarterback and truly not try to be cute, not try to say, "Hey, Kirk, we're going to give you one chance only."
Okay, that's good. If you want to turn it to Turbo Snark, you're like, "Great idea, Gary. Hand the ball to Cousins, who is an 8-8 quarterback for a reason, Gary."
I don't want to be called shrill. Because that's what women get when they get all huffy and puffy.
I don't think you have that like voice issue, though.
My voice is naturally kind of low to begin with, but I could yell.
I'm saying like turn the turbo snark.
Can
all the
I
way
get
up.
That screeching wheel?
Do that again.
Can I get that again?
Take a little more time.
No, I mean I'm done. I can't say anything more than that. But I just kind of needed to feel that. Engine's still running, apparently, in my ear right now.
Yeah, it just stays running for a while, just like the snark will.
Well, I mean, I just don't think that there's any reason to let play calling off the hook here. Is that the product of a young play caller, or what is it? Because
I really think it was just such an egregiously stupid decision. That,
it was so bad.
That a play call is so secondary to, "Oh my God, why did you ever consider throwing that?"
I think
that's why.
And it's first down. So run the ball, and it's second and goal.
I think their name in at the end, if you're like, "Run the ball,
Gary.
Kevin or Gary or whoever the hell calls the plays these days."
Seriously, nobody knows. It's just...
I've got a few more.
Okay.
Hey, great idea, Ron Rivera, to play Cam Newton in the preseason.
Yeah.
Perfect idea. Let's take a guy whose body is essentially broken in every single place that exists on him and put him out there in games that don't matter so he can get hurt. And then, even worse, you won't admit that you screwed up. So you're going to put Cam Newton out there in a real game where he gets more hurt and ruins the game for you because he can't play anymore because you broke him. Great work, Ron Rivera. You got another one?
Trying to think. I'm scanning. I mean, can I?
Anything. Anything you want. How about the refs? You want to go in on the refs?
Yeah. Okay. That's fine.
All right. Go ahead. Yeah. Don't sound shrill.
Thanks for everything, Alberto Rivera.
Yes.
All of a sudden, no one knows what the heck is going on the field, and there's phone calls being placed from outer space, a.k.a. New York City, saying, nope. We're going to take a play that just finished, a touchdown play, and we're going to go ahead and nitpick it and find pass interference.
Brilliant.
And we're not even going to tell you who it is. We're just going to say the offensive player who committed pass interference, which no one knew. Dalvin Cook didn't even know until he got, I think somebody let him know in the locker room.
Yes.
He had no clue.
It was us. We told him.
Had no clue that pass interference was called on him. And the thing that irritates me the most, Alberto Rivera, and the reason I'm saying it like that is I know his name's Al, but they put it like that for whatever reason
on the video. Actually, calling him Alberto is tremendous. In fact, only do that for the rest of the season. Whenever it's the refs, is be like, great work, Alberto. Can I just tack on here? I think that's allowed, right?
Yeah.
We noticed that someone didn't have their shoes tied, a wide receiver. Flag! Alberto!
Well, the thing that irritates me the most about that is just there was such a lack of communication. And even the refs in the stadium had no clue what the hell was going on. Mike Zimmer said he felt like they were doing their best to try to let him know. But it was a call placed from New York. And I just think that that is such an egregious thing to do because there has to be clear and like undenied evidence that shows you.
Which it was neither of those things.
It was neither of those things. I couldn't even tell in the video it was so grainy, the one that Alberto Rivera was talking on.
AB.
Because Zimmer said afterwards, I asked him, I said, like, what was the explanation you got? He's like, oh, it was the second guy through. Well, the second guy through is Darnell Savage. BJ Goodson is the first linebacker that he makes contact with off the line of scrimmage. And what's stopping you from asking the question, what if he's getting jammed? What if the safety is trying to jam Dalvin Cook and Dalvin Cook's not actually blocking?
He was playing the same role in it that Cook was.
It's like, you know, tie goes to the runner. Now we're just gonna penalize offensive players, Alberto Rivera.
So here's what you do, though. If you're a defensive player and they're doing a little bit of a pick play,
I would just flail
yourself away. Oh, I've been interfered with. Review. Right? This is egregious.
And I think
insane,
the Vikings
Alberto.
Players and coaches handle that probably better than any other team would, because I saw Derek Carr's comments for the one in their game, and he said like that was like the worst thing he's ever seen, or you know, you can go ultra hyperbole with stuff like this when it happens.
He seems like a whiner anyway.
But yeah, I mean, it was ugly. You got another one?
No, but I wanted to ask you here before we go to break,
because
we have like a minute and a half, 2 minutes, right, Jonathan? Like 3 minutes, maybe.
Yeah, around.
So I think you could spend 3 minutes because we're gonna get Alex Boone in next. And Alex is going to talk about the offensive line. Ooh. So it's going to be heavy.
It's going to be,
okay?
It's
like,
deep.
Yeah, it's going to get serious.
Dark.
Did you like the way anybody played on Sunday? I mean, let's just like take a second. Just like
on the offensive line?
No, anybody. I mean, on the Minnesota Vikings.
I like Dalvin Cook.
Is that it? Anybody else?
I like Dalvin Cook, and I like the adjustments that Harrison Smith made after getting embarrassed on that first drive.
Yeah.
That was it. And you know what? Honestly, Everson Griffin was a monster.
Total beast.
Like, monster. 11 pressures against David Bakhtiari. Like, he is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, he has really, really, like, amazed me in just how he's come back, because he looked so rusty last year. And I think people wondered, you know, is Father Time going to start taking over here? What's that going to be? And, you know, he looks fantastic. And, I mean, obviously, the sack Daniil Hunter had, I think I tweeted at the time, that was, like, the most...
Unreal.
Most ferocious thing. That's like... That's the noise that
really sounded like it. That sounded like a lion eating an antelope.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was great.
Can you save that sound effect for later? Can you, like, replay that?
I'll grab it.
Let me throw out a few.
Yeah, do you like anybody?
I can't make that noise with my face, but I will say that Jayron Kearse has been legit great.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's been actually really, really
good. It was a bad matchup the first time, but, like, Devontae Adams was already putting the Vikings in a pickle because of Xavier Rhodes. But
what he's asked to do, I think Jayron Kearse has been terrific.
Yeah.
Eric Kendricks has looked really good so far. I watched the game back on tape this morning and just wrote down a few things that I noticed. And here's another thing, though. So Anthony Barr did basically nothing in this game and struggled at times. Eric Wilson made some plays. And I just couldn't help but think, after what we saw from Eric Wilson at times last year, like, Barr is really talented. He's really good. But Wilson looks like he can play and he would have cost you nothing. And that's going to be in the back of my mind a lot this year, is how they spent their money and bringing back Anthony Barr. If Eric Wilson, every time he's asked to go in, continues to be this good as he was last year, and then the way he played the other day against Green Bay, it wasn't like super noticeable. He didn't get like five sacks or something, but he just made plays.
It's good in coverage.
Yeah, he had a couple of tackles, a couple of run stops, especially in the second half where everybody was good. But they were trying to do the thing like, oh, we're going to get the extra tight end out there and get your other linebacker out on the field and take advantage. But they couldn't because Eric Wilson is good. And it's like,
The only player right now that they are getting their money's worth of guys that they either signed in free agency or brought back is Everson Griffin.
Absolutely.
And even then, I mean, they made him take a pay cut. So,
Joseph, I didn't think, had a great day yesterday.
No, I think Linville, I don't know what it is. You talk about, okay, well, they're going to be better at stopping the run because you plug Shamar next to him and it becomes 2017 all over again.
And the Shamar Stephen thing
didn't really happen.
They acted like he was the next Kevin Williams or something. And he's just a guy out there. Anyway, so there were players, especially on the defensive side, who I thought were very, very good on Sunday. And they just continued to develop talent. Jaleel Johnson made a great play in that game. So it's almost like they should have believed in themselves a little more for the amount of talent that they have. All right, so let's take a break. Alex Boone, coming up next, we're going to talk about the offensive line. Can it be fixed? Can it be helped? Because Kirk Cousins getting pressured on 60% of his dropbacks so far this season. We discussed with Alex, and we'll see what he thinks about all these holding penalties as well. When we return, you listen to Purple Daily on Score North.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Purple Daily.
Everybody's winning, man. Everybody know that. I want to win. Straight up. I excuse my language, but everybody know that. That's who I am. That's that passion, that fire, that heart. That's what y'all love. And I'm going to continue giving that as long as I'm here.
All right, back here on Purple Daily, Matthew Collar, ESPN's Courtney Cronin, and joining the mix, former Vikings offensive lineman Alex Boone. Alex, you love good offensive line play, right?
Oh, yeah, love it.
Gets you excited when you watch a football game?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So Sunday, that was fine, right?
Oh, man, talk about rough. Dude, it's so, like, deceiving, too, because Dalvin Cook had such, like, a great game. But if you look at it, it's, like, three plays. He had, like, 120 yards. And then after that, it's Alex Martinez just destroying him from the side.
Yeah, there were many times where, because people asked, well, they said, oh, I mean, the run grades and stuff for PFF must have been good, right? And I watched the tape back this morning. It's like, no, actually, the run blocking wasn't really good either. I mean, almost nothing good happened there. So my question for you, Alex, is...
Okay.
What do we do about this? I mean, when we watched week one, we said, well, okay, Garrett Bradbury, it's his first game ever. So I understand if you get trucked a couple of times or something. But then it happens again, and he's facing Kenny Clark. I understand that. But there's lots of good football players in the NFL that he's going to face. And I don't want to just point at him either. There were other things that went wrong, too, that just are confounding. I mean,
right.
Dakota Dozier tries to help on a wide rush when Bradbury desperately needed help up the middle, and the result is a pressure on a three-man rush. And so it's not even just that Bradbury's struggling. I think it's across the line, pretty much everyone aside from Brian O'Neill, and he wasn't perfect either. Is there any solution to this? Because right now, they're getting mauled up there, and it doesn't look like it's going to stop anytime soon.
Well, I mean, let me ask you this. Does it look like to you, because to me, it kind of looks like this. Does it look like they're not gelling well? Because at one point, I watched like a 94 power, which is a power to the right. And I watched the left guard pull. And for whatever reason, I don't know why he did it, but he just ran right into Brian O'Neill. Like he just, you hit the wrong guy. Like, dude, you got to move out of his way. But to me, it looks like they're just not in sync and they're not gelling. I don't know. Do you get that vibe from them?
Well, I definitely do from this, but I can't tell if that's just like talent or what. Because, I mean, I would think that that would play a big role. If you're just not that good and you have guys getting beat consistently one-on-ones, that you're also going to look like you're miscommunicating.
Right. And well, let me ask you this. Who to you is the leader on that offensive line?
I think it should be Riley Reiff, wouldn't you?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have two Riley Reiffs. So we say, okay, Riley's the leader. So now we go into film, and Riley's the leader, and we're watching Riley get beat consistently. Now what does everybody think about the leader? Is Riley the leader?
Yeah, that's tougher, right?
Right. So now all of a sudden we're kind of like, well, is Josh Klein the leader? And all of a sudden we watch a twist where Josh Klein falls down and Kirk Cousins gets destroyed. And we're like, well, are you the leader?
Yeah.
You know, and then we're trying to look at, like, at some point, somebody has to step up and say, hey, guys, like, this is disgusting what we're putting on film. We can't do this anymore because we are opening so many holes that we are not going to be able to close all of these. Right? We got a problem with our twist game. Now we got a problem with our zones. We can't block them in a linebacker. I mean, there's things that are showing up on tape that teams are going to go, hey, listen, look what they did here. This was so simple, too. Like, they didn't even do anything. At one point, they looked like they were going to bring five guys. They ended up rushing three. They get pressure, and they get an interception. How does that even happen? Like, you can't show that to a defense and say, hey, listen, we're good. We can handle exotic looks. You can't when that happens.
So, Alex, I'm looking at Garrett Bradbury's mock draftable right now. Just trying to get some thoughts on, like, size, height, measurables, things like that that
went
into this.
NFL combine results.
Yeah. It's, right. So, I think we talked about this and just, like, getting undersized linemen to run this scheme and the challenges that that presents. I mean, if I tell you, just, you know, without, like, knowing too much about it, like, if this is just, like, a blind test, if I tell you that his wingspan is 76.5 inches, and that puts him in the 6th percentile, and his arm length is 34 3/4, which puts him in the 3rd percentile, I remember...
That's short.
But that's short. Like, why would you... Is there reason to believe that those types of... I mean, I don't want to call him deficiencies, it's just
what was
who
his
he
weight?
Is.
What was
At
his
that
weight?
Time, he was 306.
And he ain't 306.
No way, there was no way he was 306.
So,
there's no chance.
Like, that to me is a cause for concern, right? Like, I mean, do you kind of see it the same way that his size is greatly hampering kind of what he can do and how effective he can be?
I don't think I took any of those variables into any consideration. I mean, I watched his film and I thought the guy was small but fast and quick. Like, mm-hmm. I get what you're trying to do. But at the end of the day, you look at this division and you say, what's the pride of every division, and this one especially, is their defenses, right? Like, you look at these defenses and you're like, man, they got some big boys up front. In Chicago, we got Akeem Hicks. Like, he's just running through people. We look over and back then in Green Bay, they had Mike Daniels, who was not very big, but he could hold his own. I mean, I played Mike a lot, and he was really good at being a run stopper, but also at being a pass rusher, which was one of, like, the first guys to be kind of tinier and still make it. And people were like, wow, this is kind of impressive. But then you look over in Detroit and you have Snacks, and then you're Minnesota and you say, let's draft the smallest center possible.
Yeah.
Like, what were you thinking? I understand that you go, you know what, this guy is great at zone. That's the dumbest excuse, by the way. Don't tell me a guy's good at zone, but he's not good at something else. Everybody can move their hips. They just want to have to work harder at it. But you look at these other centers, and I look at, like, an Eric McCoy down at the Saints, and I think, here's a guy to me that was really good. And I had interviewed him before and talked to him, so I really liked his mental game, because I was kind of throwing a lot of things at him, and he was kind of throwing them back at me. And I was like, you know what, here's a center who's going to be a guy that's not afraid to voice his concern, not afraid to kind of jab you back. Because to me, Bradbury kind of seems like this guy that when you throw a little bit on his plate, he's going to be like, I don't know if I want to deal with this right now.
And that's how it's looked for these first couple of games. And you make a great point, Alex. And I was thinking the same thing walking out of Lambeau the other day, that this team had a left tackle on the board. They had other centers on the board that were graded highly by other teams. Elgton Jenkins is another one who's pretty good. And so far, the other guys have performed all right. But you're talking about a division that is just filled with monsters. And I think, Alex, anytime you're talking about, here's why something's important for the run game, you should really hesitate at that point, right? I mean, shouldn't you? It's 2019. That is the year. Everyone's throwing like 300 yards, and you have a team saying, we're drafting for zone running. Like, what?
Yeah, but could you imagine them being the outlier? Like, they win it all and they turn around and go, yeah, we got everybody.
Yeah, you're right.
It's never going to happen.
We ran for 2,800 yards as a team.
We got you. We won 10-3 almost every game, but we did it. No, I mean, people don't want to see that, number one. And number two, eventually you're going to need a quarterback, and that's where they're going to come into problems. I mean, I think it's admirable that what they're trying to do. I think Chicago's still trying to do it, and they're kind of – Chicago's in a bad situation because they're kind of committed to their quarterback, and that guy couldn't throw a ball to save his life. And so now you're looking at this team, and you're saying, well – are we going to have to run the ball 45 times? Well, number one, how long can Dalvin Cook do
exactly.
that? Because – that is a lot of carries. I don't care who you are. You can bust runs all day. Week 8, week 9, week 10, those are going to start to hurt real bad. And then the O-line's going to turn around and go, hey, we're kind of hurt too, so we need to start throwing more play action in. And then the play action's not as biteable. Like on Sunday, you could see those defensive ends at some point. It was maybe around the second, third quarter. Those defensive ends are like, listen, we're not scared anymore. We know when you're going to run it. We know when you're not going to run it. We're just going to cut off the defensive end, and we're going to make a beeline right at the intersection point. And whoever has the ball is getting creamed. And you saw it show up consistently towards the end of the game.
Yeah, I mean, what can they do, though? I mean, at this point, like, if you're not going to put the game in Dalvin Cook's hands, which we were going back and forth about earlier, just that last play call that really sealed the game for Minnesota with trusting Kirk after not trusting him for three quarters, knowing how much he was struggling.
Right.
How sustainable do you think this is with Dalvin? Because I asked Mike Zimmer that yesterday, and he said, I don't know. Because
nobody knows.
You can utilize... When are we going to start to see Alexander Mattison get mixed in there more than just four carries? I mean, look at how much he trucked that guy down at the end.
Unbelievable.
Just how heavy, like hard running, and I think Zimmer called it violent. Why should we anticipate seeing more of that so they can preserve Dalvin Cook now? Because it's just, it doesn't feel like the last two weeks, while his carries and his touches have been consistent from week to week, that doesn't feel sustainable knowing you have 14 games at minimum left.
Absolutely. And look at the division you're playing in, filled with defensive guys that are just big and nasty and want to fall on top of you and hit you and smack you. I mean, it's, to me, when you're looking at this, like the Ravens, right? Everyone's like, how, like, because before the season started, everyone looked at the Ravens and they thought, there's no way Lamar Jackson's going to be able to throw a ball more than 20 yards. He comes out miraculously, he's some completely different quarterback. But that was the big question on them. How long can you sustain this run game, and how effective can it be after 8 weeks? Because after 8 weeks, you're not redrawing up plays. Mm-hmm. You're drawing the same plays. So eventually people catch on, they go, oh, it's a wide zone. Like, so... Somebody wrote an article about how it's like this new Kubiak and Stefanski system where the guard and the tackle pull and somebody blocks down, and it's a difference between wide zone and a toss play. And, you know, one of the plays we used to call G, and it was a G scheme because the guard kicked out the widest, and that's what always made it a G. But when you look at it, eventually people found a way to defeat it, and they'd say, okay, listen, instead of letting him just go to the widest, we're going to crash everybody down through the tight ends, because tight ends can't block anyways. So instead of trying to take them on and letting...
Don't
we know it. Yeah, listen, we got a lot to talk about, but when you crash them down, you pretty much ruin every play. We saw this last weekend. If they crash and they get past the tight end, it's over. Like, they can ruin every play. So you think, how long can you sustain an offense where you're running the same plays? Eventually, people are going to say, hey, listen, go through the B-gap. You know, backside linebackers, you, as soon as you see those guys open, you just come downhill right now and smoke them.
So this is something similar along the same lines of what Preston Smith did on one of the Vikings play actions, where there's play action to the right, and Cousins is supposed to roll left, turn his hips, set his feet, and throw downfield. But Preston Smith did not bite at all. I mean, he was just watching them run the play action like, okay, you're coming back over here, aren't you? Hello, I'm right in your face. And this is the thing that I remember by the end of Gary Kubiak's time in Denver, he had been running this same offense for so long that some defensive players, Richard Sherman being one of them, said, we knew a lot of the stuff that was coming with the Gary Kubiak offense. And I think that there were plays, at least it looked like this on tape, Alex, where the defense knew what was coming. And that one was very specific. Like, when you have a defensive end not follow down the line at all for the cutback, he knows exactly what is coming there. And it was just a big question to me now is, not only can they protect for Kirk Cousins, but can they actually fool other teams? Because we haven't seen a lot of looks where even Atlanta was particularly fooled.
Right. Well, you know what it is? It's those two backside tight ends. They're always back there. And you're like, you're thinking to yourself as a defensive end, why are there two guys back here when the play, if the ball is going away, like, they're going to try and get one of these guys at least play side. But not only that, but then the one guy looks at him, he's like, hey, are you running the curl or the hitch? Defensive end's like, all right, we got this. We're good. He's running the dig route, guys. It's just, you know, but I think a lot of it comes down to when, because I saw the same thing. And the first thing I always think is that defensive end is getting real cocky because he's, in his mind, he's saying, if he hands it off, I can make this tackle on the running back. But if he doesn't, I need to be able to cut back for the quarterback. And a lot of those risky guys will do it. Now, the smarter players are gonna keep going down the line, right? Like, because at minimum, I would rather have the quarterback roll out. I don't want this running back to bust one loose down my lane. That's not cool. But towards the end of the game, it started to feel like to me that they knew what was coming. Like, yep. They was like, he was. It wasn't even like I'm trying to be cocky. It was like, nah, dude, I know you're rolling back. Like, I'm coming for you right now. At one point, Dean Lowry just made a beeline right towards Kirk Cousins, and you were like, man, this is getting ugly.
Well, what would you do then in that last
hand,
play?
Hand it off. I don't understand. Like, when you're looking at this, and we're talking about, can we sustain this down the road? Let's not go down the road. Let's worry about right now in Green Bay, because this is a division game. So this is really important to us. I'm driving down the field, and I think I heard you guys say before, 7 out of the 8 plays were runs, but then all of a sudden I want Kirk to make the one play to get us in the win. What were you thinking? Sometimes the game is so easy. It just presents itself, and these coaches are like, I'm going to outthink this game. Watch this. Let me show you how we're going to do this. Because like, at one point, they were driving down the field. They ran the ball on first down, second down, and they were crunching yards. It's third and one. I go, oh, this is going to be great. They're gonna run it again. They fake the run, and they throw a slant to Diggs that he drops.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing?
Yeah, he talked about that too. He was like Pete Carroll really upset about him.
Yeah, I mean, you make these boneheaded mistakes, and then it's like, oh, I'm so like you have the players saying I'm so disappointed, but really it's the coaches making boneheaded decisions too.
Well, I felt the same way, and so did Courtney. She went on a rant with Turbo Snark earlier about the play call. Just like I mean.
What's Turbo Snark?
Turbo Snark is when.
Oh, man, we got to introduce this at some point.
I feel like you would be really good at this.
It's what's Turbo Snark?
It's like when you.
Wait, is Turbo from the game? Because they were. Aaron Rodgers was screaming Turbo a lot.
Oh, was he? No, I didn't even notice that. Okay. No, okay. This is just when I'm a generally sarcastic and snarky person to begin with, but then when you take it up to 11, you just did it to me, so I think that you are too. But when you really turn it up, and so I went on a big thing about how, you know, Adam Gase had no idea where he was in his press conference. Who's shocked that this didn't work out with the Jets? And Courtney Turbo snarked about
Al Riveron.
Al Riveron.
Oh, that had to be. Yeah. I can't stand Al Riveron right now. Alberto.
That's exactly what I said.
See, I told you you'd be a
by
professional
the way,
with this.
Nobody knows how to say his last name because I say Riveron and somebody else says Riveron.
Riveron, right.
I'm like, dude, what is it? Because I'm in the media and I have to know it. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to call him Al from now on.
Yeah, call him Alberto.
That's a joke.
That's when you're being especially snarky. But so you'll have your opportunities. But let me ask you this, though, Alex. Is there a solution with the pass protection? Because Kirk Cousins is being pressured 6 out of every 10 dropbacks. And even with the frustration that you might have for how poorly he played, he missed throws. There's one at the end of the game where it's open. There's another one that Sage Rosenfels was driven crazy by on a corner route that he just overthrew on a third down. So he played poorly, no question.
Right.
But when you're pressured that often, even the best quarterbacks are not going to be great. So what's the solution here?
It takes time, because you know what? I saw the same thing you did. I mean, to me, Kirk looks really flustered in the pocket. And to me, I was taking notes of this last game because I was watching it a whole bunch, trying to look at some things. And he was flustered early. And it was, to me, it looked like he was out of his element really early in this game. And the problem is he's so overanalyzing everything that the minute he's out of his element, he's overanalyzing that. And so you can see it in the way he's patting the ball. You can see it in his feet. You can see the way he's moving around. But not only that, but some of the hits this guy takes. I mean, even after he throws the ball, he's still getting crushed in the backfield. And you think to yourself, at what point is this quarterback going to feel any relief? Because you're standing back there and you're like, man, I literally have 2 seconds to get rid of this ball or I'm going to get crushed by somebody. That has to suck. And that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, he was 4 of 12 with an interception when under duress in week 2. So
but that,
certainly
that
not
interception
good.
Was his fault. Because
yes,
whoever
exactly.
throws into a 4-man box like that, you're an idiot and you deserve to have that be picked.
My question with Kirk is, how much can we put on the protections, like how much of that falls on him? I mean, yes, the offensive line.
Oh, no, it's on the O-line. You can never do that.
You won't? Okay.
I would never put a protection on a quarterback because, you know, the quarterback has so much to think about. And it's not a fair thing to say, hey, you got to know the mic and you got to know which way the safeties are rotated and you got to know if it's open or closed and you got to know if it's two or cloud. You know, there's so much. And then, oh, hey, by the way, you got to know which way you're sliding. But that's the team kind of did that to him by putting a rookie center up there. And then what else did they put up there with him? A failed center, another guard who was kind of failed over in Tennessee. Like you can't, there's nothing around him to help him go, okay, listen, guys, this is what we're doing. We're going to go left. You know, I don't see anybody out there taking accountability and being like, yo, pointing. You don't even see a confident mic point out there.
And yeah. when you don't see a confident mic point,
dude, it's all about the mic.
That, when I played, Trubisky at that point.
I'll tell you what, when I played, if the mic point wasn't strong and fierce, it something was happening in that huddle. Like, dude, what's wrong with you? Football. We're going to fight. Man. Football.
Football. That's the only way I could respond to that. Alex, as an offensive lineman, I'm sure that you are super jacked to see holding penalties go way up. So let's discuss that next. Are the referees ruining our lives? We will discuss Alex Boone, ESPN's Courtney Cronin. We'll be right back. We got neck rolls to hand out later as well. Here, you are listening to Purple Daily on Score North.
The countdown to the Medtronic Twin Cities Marathon weekend is on. It's not too late to sign up for the TC 10K, TC 5K presented by Fredrickson and Byron, or the Medtronic TC family events featuring races for kids of all ages. To learn more or sign up, visit tcmevents.org or visit scorenorth.com, keyword marathon.
Overall, on the penalties, I mean, so few last year, 20 so far. I mean, just how frustrating is that?
Very undisciplined. I know Bradbury had two. I think Diggs had to. I think Thielen had to. You know, they got to start playing within the rules. And they know the rules. That's their responsibility to do what they're supposed to do.
I was penalized twice during that soundbite by the National Football League.
Did they call in from New York, or did they let you know on the field?
Yeah, no.
Was there a reviewer?
Yeah, they called Jonathan. They reviewed the first segment. They flagged us on four different things. I bumped into my mic. I'm like, oh, that's a flag, and just barely touched it.
Did you extend your arm when you were doing
that? No, yeah, I extended my arm to reach for my Diet Dr. Pepper, so I was flagged for that as well.
Hey, can we just talk about how the verbiage, the referee's verbiage, has gotten so unclassy that it's not even fun anymore? Like, when did we start calling it a UNR? What is this? Unnecessary roughness?
Oh, is that what they're calling it?
He didn't hear him. He was like, the UNR is now canceled. Yo, dude.
Oh, nobody, I didn't
nobody
even know
reminded
that.
Me.
I was like, is that a disease or something?
Or how
like,
about when they say after a discussion?
Yes,
whoa.
Yeah, that was obnoxious.
No.
Super annoying.
Well, we don't want to know
after
that.
Discussion. Well, what else
we've discussed, and that is all. Thank you.
The thing that I don't understand about Sunday, and we never got any sort of explanation, when they called the offensive pass interference on Dalvin Cook, they said the offensive player. Like, they didn't say who it was.
They probably didn't know his number.
But
it happens all the time.
Oh, okay. So that's not something that we...
They should have been able to say number 33, right?
But Cook had no clue that it was called on him until he got into the locker room. Was that just a product of they didn't know, or like it wasn't communicated to them? Like, what do you think?
I don't think it was that big of a deal. I think that when you look at... Listen, I'm going to start out by saying this. I warned all of you that this was a bad idea, and everybody laughed at me. Ha, ha, ha. No, it's not. This is great. Let's bring in more replays. Let's get more eyes on it. No, we don't want more eyes on it. You want less eyes, because now they're seeing every little tic-tac hit. Oh, Dalvin Cook brushed his shoulder against him. Technically, that's OPI. He interfered with him. What do you want me to say? I warned you, people. Stop trying to look in here into this game and with the telescope and be like, show us everything. No. You don't want to see all the little tiny things. You want to see the big fun things. So focus on the big fun things. But now everyone's like, oh, no, it's on. Because gambling's insane right now for it. So they want everything to be legit.
Well, what are they supposed to do about the number of holding penalties? I saw this stat of just how much they've jumped up this year. And like you said, I don't think anybody wants this. I'm not saying that teams should get away with holding all the time, but there is got to be something to slightly level the playing field, because defensive lines are very talented, and we've certainly had that on display these first 2 weeks, and especially on Sunday. But if you're going to call holding, I mean, that was the old joke was, oh, you can call holding on any play, and the NFL is like, we will then.
I warned you.
Who wants this?
I warned you guys not to do it. They want so many people watching now, and it's like, but the truth is, when you go on Monday or Tuesday and you sit with a team and they're watching the game, they're writing down every single play that they're going to send to the league, and they're telling you why they're going to send it into the league, and they're letting you know what they're going to say. Like, you know, I remember sitting in meetings, and they're going to say, hey, jot this note down, G-Row. We're going to send it into the league. 32 right here, bumped into the receiver, and we think it should be DPI and blah, blah, blah. And the league eventually is like, you know what? Fine. You want all these penalties? You're going to get them all. And now all of a sudden, teams are going, hey, wait a minute. Maybe we don't want them all. No. You wanted them all. Now you're getting them all. Stop whining about it.
So my question for you, Courtney, is this team in particular leads the National Football League in penalties, which is not usual for a Mike Zimmer team to be this, if you want to call it that, undisciplined and maybe unlucky in terms of some of the things that were called. I didn't think that Stephon Diggs had an egregious push off, and I thought that Adam Thielen's was kind of battling for the ball. But if you look at where they ranked in penalties last year, they had 92, which was the second best in the entire league. Does this go under, in some ways, this team trying too hard? Are they overmatched? Are they now suddenly undisciplined? I mean, or is it just 2 weeks and the NFL's weird and we just have to deal with it?
I mean, some of the penalties in that game, like, you know, Zimmer said himself, like, Diggs knows you can't push off. And he's like, I don't know if I pushed off. I don't know the rules. And a lot of stuff like that. So, you know, the fact of the matter is these penalties keep happening. I think it was, there was two on Thielen, two on Diggs, and the helmet one was stupid. Like, he knows that he shouldn't do that. And Bradbury had the two holds, so that was, you know, that was unfortunate, but...
But even in week one, they committed a boatload of penalties. And I just wonder if there is something to, we talked about this in the first hour a little bit, the pressure facing this team, and if there is a tendency to try too hard sometimes and commit penalties. Is there anything to that, you guys think?
Yeah, I think that when you put things out on tape that are bad for your team, like, let's say the twist game, right? We know that they're struggling with the twist game, and it really wasn't even a twist that got home in one of the times. The guy fell over, you know, the right guard of the Vikings falls over, takes out the center, and all of a sudden one guy comes free. But at the end of the day, you're looking at that, it's plays like that that lead to holding. Mm-hmm. Because they're undisciplined. Somebody falls down doesn't mean you fall down. Stay up. Come on. Now we're becoming undisciplined again. You can legitimately get rid of half the penalties if you could just cut down on the undisciplined tiny little things. Like, hey, when he falls, you don't have to fall too. Stay up. You know, to get out of your center's way. It's like the little things that you forget sometimes when you're frustrated and you're playing.
Right, yeah. And so I think it's not just that the league is calling more penalties. It's that this team, too. And when tell me if I'm wrong here, but I've got a theory, too, about this quarterback and his impact on other people. Because, Alex, you mentioned, and we felt this there in the stadium, that early in the game, Kirk looked very flustered, and you could just sort of get that feel. It's like, oh no, this is week 17 again. This is one of those days. Just mark
Can't
it down.
Be.
Yeah, you can basically predict the rest of the game by the first quarter with Kirk Cousins sometimes. And I would throw it out there that when your quarterback clearly looks rattled to even people on TV and people who are 100 feet above him.
Imagine blocking for him.
Right, imagine on the field. I've got to think that it impacts the other players around him.
Kills my mood. I mean, you know what it does? It puts me in a bad mood. Because here all week, we've been disciplined to go into this game plan. Like, we even got the first 20 plays. We have the hidden gem of this game. And this guy, within five plays, is already flustered. You're like, this cannot be happening right now. You're trying to bring him down and calm him down. But when everyone around you is getting him hit and getting him flustered and no one's catching any balls and he's overthrowing people, like, sometimes it just gets taken out of your element. And you have to say, hey, listen, at the end of the day, the best me is the best person for this team. So that's what I'm going to focus on. I got to stick here. And sometimes you hope that you maybe being calm and kind of being in a good mood will kind of rub off on him. And I think a lot of guys got pissed at me because I would joke at times and they'd be like, dude, it's not the time. I'd be like, dude, my man over here is giving up three sacks. Like, I need him to come out of this funk really quickly, and I don't know how else to do it. Like, I can put a foot you know where if you want me to, but that's only going to make him go more TJ Clemmings. So I don't want to do that. So, you know, I'd sit there and joke with guys and mess with them and tell them jokes and be like, ah, yeah, it's fun, right? And they'd be like, no, it's not. I'd be like, please, just God, laugh once, you know, come around for me. But then I started realizing that if I just do me and I stick in, if I stick in my little world, that maybe that'll rub off, and that ended up being the best thing for everybody.
Fair enough. I think that, I mean, when it comes to the penalties that we saw on Sunday, I mean, do you anticipate this becoming a trend for this team?
I hope not. Like, I mean, they're easily fixable.
Yeah, but like with the holding calls, I mean, I think Matt brought that up earlier. Is that fixable? I mean, it seems like the refs are calling it differently this year. I mean, Zimmer's talked about with like the advantage, I guess, for defensive linemen and like the guys like reaching around and all of that, and that's being called differently this year. How do you?
Zimmer's happy that there are more holding calls.
Yeah, he's obviously I'm thrilled about it. But like when it affects your offensive line,
then you're not thrilled.
Yeah, you're not.
Right, and so then you're saying, hey, how do we fix this? Right, like maybe we teach a different technique. Maybe we tell them to open up more. You know, this was always the big thing for me is we would start getting into like challenges, and people would look at it and they go, how are you going to figure it out? I go, I don't know, but we're pros, so that's our job. Like your job at the end of the day is to say this isn't working for some of the guys. How do we change it? How do we make it better? You know, one of the guys is maybe undersized. What do we do? Well, we look around the league and we say, who's undersized? Jason Kelsey, he's one of the biggest undersized players in the NFL. I mean, as a center, he's probably, what, 275 soaking wet? And what do they have him do all day? Pull everywhere. Like, Jason, guess what? You just became the puller for the entire team. We're not going to pull any of our guards because they're too big. We're not going to pull any of our tackles because they get paid too much. But you, sir, are going to pull on every play. And that's what makes him good.
Yeah, no, I think, and that might be something that they have to start doing with Garrett Bradbury, is starting to just move him all over the place. I don't know.
It's tough, too. I mean, it's easy to be like, look what Jason Kelsey do.
Yeah.
You go do that. Like, that guy's an all-pro player. You can't just say that, but you could say, hey, listen, I like what they do with him. Maybe we should consider putting Garrett on the edge more, moving him around, maybe run some G plays with him pulling for the corner.
Gotta run those G plays.
I mean, G plays are fun, but when people start to scheme, like, the problem is with G, you give it away because you're tight end set. Like, everyone's like, okay, listen, either they're running zone away or they're running G to us. So if you crash down on the tight end, you're good. So you have to have your tight ends on point for that play. But if you can get it and you can get your center on the corner, it's a house call with Dalvin Cook.
Okay, so that was just too football-y for my brain. We'll address that on Thursday at the end of the show.
That's fair.
Yes,
oh, yeah, 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 our new segment.
Yeah, it's great. It's going to be great. Declan has been keeping notes, so at the end of every Thursday show, we go through the things that no one understood, and then you explain them. Let me throw this out there to you, because Courtney and I had a discussion about just the schedule that the Vikings face. It's wild, Alex. I mean,
yeah, it is.
You got Chicago, you got Mahomes, you got Dak Prescott in Dallas, and that defense. You have at Seattle, the hardest place to play in football, and all these quarterbacks who are going down around the league, none of them play against the Vikings, their team. Yeah. So you don't get any easy weeks, at least for right now. Do you think what we saw on Sunday was something that is just a week two? It didn't go well. It was as bad as you think it was, but it's a long season and there's lots of opportunities. Or do you think that we see those games more often than not from this offense? And if the defense has even the slightest hiccup, it's going to be over.
Yeah, no, I think the defense will rebound faster than the offense. I think the offense put things on film that are going to be really tough to address in 1 week, right? Like we're talking about some of the most major things, like in pass pro, we got to work on our twist game. Okay, well, now every team knows, hey, we're going to twist on every single passing down. Just because if the mere fact that they don't pick us up, they might get called for holding at the same time. So we're just going to twist everything. And then at the other side of the ball, you know, you got to get to the mic. I mean, the center has got to somehow get through the nose guard and get to the mic, because he is literally going from sideline to sideline and smacking Dalvin Cook every which way. And at one point, you have the nose tackle who's facing in the opposite direction as the zone play was going. He made the play. How is that even possible? Like, you have to get Garrett Bradbury in an effective blocking situation.
Okay, so one thing I have been concerned about for a little bit now, and I'm wondering if it's starting to come to a head, is what's going on with Xavier Rhodes. And it's not just the first series. You know, there was that 39-yard reception that there was some sort of miscommunication on the back end. It looked like he, you know, started up pretty close to him near the line and then decided he wanted to play about 5 to 7 yards off, and they play him in man cover two and he doesn't follow him into the slot. We know that. That's always been the game plan for Devontae Adams.
The pass interference later, though, I mean, that was the one call that I was like, okay, I agree with that one.
Like, I just don't understand.
That one does not have to be reviewed.
Like, my thing, and I'm worried about it, is how much longer can they go on with this expecting he's going to shadow the number one receiver? Because it almost felt like he was a liability, especially in those first three drives.
I mean, I think the one thing that's nice about when you're falling back on this defensive problem is you have Mike Zimmer. So you have one of the smartest guys out there saying, hey, listen, we can't continue to keep doing this as the season goes on. How are we going to fix this? Well, let's start getting other people to help. I think that one of the guys that really is kind of starting to show up is Jerron Kearse. And I think he's been a big role for this defense. So I think you start to say, hey, how do we get him more involved? You know, how do we maybe take the weight off Xavier a little bit? You know, we might get some guys back soon, which is going to be a huge help. But that's another thing. You know, people keep forgetting that Mike Hughes isn't playing. Guys are hurt right now. And when they come back, they're hoping that it's going to change this defense and help this nickel game.
Would you make a little phone call to Jacksonville about Jalen Ramsey?
No. Did you see the fight he just had on the sideline with his coach?
It's Doug Marrone. I know Doug Marrone. Yeah, that's ignore
Listen,
that.
Listen, I don't care if it's Mike Solari. No, at the I end
mean,
of the day,
I, really, it's Doug Marrone. You, ignore that. I covered him in Buffalo. He does this all the time. He fought with Jerry Hughes. Jerry Hughes is the best. He fought with Fred Jackson, who's like the best guy of all time. Like, I mean, Jalen might be a hothead, and he might be a problem.
Yeah, you don't want that.
I lean Doug Marrone on this one.
I get that. I get what you're saying. Like, it's Doug Marrone, and it's probably his personality, and it's how it goes. But when you look at a team like this, you say, okay, listen, there's talent at a lot of positions. Mm-hmm. Why would you need to bring in a player that, yeah, does he upgrade your defense? For sure, he'd upgrade it. But he's going to bring so much drama and baggage to your locker room, and you don't know how the experiment's going to go. And if it goes wrong, it's your job. It's your career. So do I really want to risk everything on Jalen Ramsey coming up here and being really cool? I don't know if I would do that.
He is so good at football.
I know, but what do you want? Like, he wants something. Everybody wants to move for a reason. Like, I get it. He's pissed they're losing. But at the end of the day, he's still going to say probably, hey, I want a new contract too. All right,
oh,
great.
Oh, yeah, he's going to want a new deal.
So now we want more. Or now what do they want? We want 2 first-round picks. Dude, what are we doing? I got to pay you 2 first-round picks and pay you $200 million? Holy Lord, who's going to do that?
But what if you gave them Xavier Rhodes and a first-round pick to make the cap space work?
They'd be like, dude, it's week two. If this was like week two preseason, maybe, yeah. But it's week two. Like, we went live bullets, and he doesn't look so hot right now.
Yeah, what do you think, though, about, I mean, just trades in season? Because we have Minkah Fitzpatrick.
They're getting crazy.
Yeah,
they're
right? I mean, like, I always thought the reason they didn't happen, and I love trades. Whatever you love, like, you love the G play and identifying the mic. I love trades that much, okay? And okay, so now that there's more trades in season, I think, like, this is exactly what I would do on Madden. So this is great.
Yeah.
Are guys just, like, so knowledgeable about the game that they can figure it out, or is it still a bad idea? Because I think it's kind of an interesting trend.
I think it's a tough thing to do. When you talk about some of these teams that are doing these trades, number one, you're talking about Miami. They're in a fire sale. They're just completely getting rid of everybody on their team, and they're saying, if you give us a first-round pick next year, we'll give you whoever you want. We just want 15 first-round picks to rebuild this team. And I actually just read an article that was really interesting because it was talking about, could they tank 2 years in a row to get Lawrence? It was like, wow, that would be incredibly ballsy, but amazingly awesome at the same time. Because Stephen Ross would be like, dude, I don't care what anyone thinks. Like, I don't need this. I just want this player, so we're going to tank forever until we get him. So it could happen. But when you talk about these trades, you're talking about bringing a guy on a team that's already gelled. And if you're trading for somebody, it's probably somebody pretty big because you need them, and it's a big deal. Like, the Steelers just traded for Micah Fitzpatrick because their safety went down. So they're like, hey, listen, you're looking for a first. We need a safety. You know, we got to somehow figure out how we're going to clean this up. How is he going to do there with that team? What if he comes in and it's like water and vinegar? Mm-hmm. What if all of a sudden it comes in and they're like, nah, man, it's bad blood. Like, people don't like it. Like, you've just messed with an entire team's chemistry to add one player that might add a little bit of beneficial goodness to your team.
Yeah, I get that could be a potential issue. I think if you're the Vikings, the reason you would make the call is because Xavier looks like he's struggling so much. And Ramsey,
he's not hurt. We know that, too. He's not hurt.
Or at least it's just the accumulation of hurt.
We right? think he's not hurt. I mean, being a former player, there's a lot of times people were like, there's no way he's hurt. You're like, that guy almost got one leg. Good Lord. Like, yeah, he's hurt. Of course he's hurt. He looks hurt. He's hurt. But they can't say that.
But with the way that he has just played over the last year and two games, if you made this big blockbuster, because it's kind of boom or bust for this year, right?
Right.
And you said, we're bringing in Jalen Ramsey, and if he tears apart our locker room, who the hell cares? Because we need to shut down everyone on defense, or we're never going to win. And you put Ramsey on an island with whoever the other team's best receiver is week to week while he figures out the rest of the defense. I mean, it's a little crazy, but it's not stupendously crazy. Like, it wouldn't be the wildest thing I ever heard, especially if you could work out a new deal with him long term.
Listen, Antonio Brown Didn't even play for the Raiders.
Okay, this is not Antonio Brown. No, I mean, I'm saying, guy is
in the
totally
world of crazy,
nuts.
We've seen the craziest thing possible. So that, by no stretch of the imagination, is crazy. To me, it just doesn't seem feasible. We're going to give up what? You want two first-rounders, and we're going to have to pay you. We're running out of money here, guys. We can't pay every single person on the defense and then not win every game. That's right. Not possible. That's how people lose their jobs. Like, hate to tell everybody, we're going down a bad road right now, because when you start paying everybody and it's like you're winning, well, all of a sudden everyone's happy because it's, you know, it's worthy and everybody deserves it. But when you start losing, people go, hey, I don't know if we're paying everybody again anymore. Mm-hmm. And,
right.
You know, we're
right.
paying the wrong people.
Yeah, and we were talking about that a little bit earlier, Alex, that, you know, the teams like this in a win now type of mode are very volatile and they can teeter on the edge and
quickly too.
Right?
They
could
go
down. It could just go
quickly.
Sideways. So even like last year, there were times where I thought this team could really fall apart and everything could go straight to hell. And they mostly held it together until the very end in week 17. But with that, coming off of that and some of these key performances by Cousins and the emphasis on doing a thing that you actually shouldn't be doing in 2019, which is running all the time. I mean, it just has this feel of a lot of tension. And I guess a trade for someone like Jalen Ramsey would totally confirm it. Yes, everyone thinks they're getting fired if this doesn't work. But in a way, I almost think it's sort of like when
you almost have to.
Yeah, like when the game, let's say you're at the end of the game and it's 4th and 20. You don't want to go for it, but you kind of have to. That's what it sort of feels like with some of these great players asking out of different places. Where maybe you should make that phone call.
Right. I think that you're jumping the gun a little bit too much. I still think it's week two. I think you're in a tough division. I don't think you're in a... I mean, look at the Bears. They're in a really bad spot. They're two games behind in the division. Like, to come out of that, you really... And that's, their offense is not regressed. Everyone's talking about the regression of them. Everyone just figured them out quickly. Like, oh, okay, I get it. They're going to try and run the ball every which way on us. Like, just shut down the run game. Make this guy throw the ball more than 5 times and we'll win, guys. That's all you got to do. So... You know, you're talking about a team right now that's just, you could still be contenders without him. And I think that when you start talking about bringing in big name people like that, it upsets a lot of people in other rooms. You know, and I'm not saying whatever, dude, it's the betterment of the team. Yeah, Jalen Ramsey on the team would be a lot better. But at what cost? There's a lot of money invested in this defense right now. There's a lot of money invested in Kirk Cousins. So you can never really be like, it's a rebuilding year. No, your quarterback makes $35 million. It's not rebuilding. We're here to win now. So, you know, but could you still pay Jalen? Is it worth giving up the 2 first-round picks for all the drama and headache that you're going to go through?
Right.
I don't know. I mean, look what the quarterbacks are making now, too. That contract would be insane. I mean, it would smoke Darrell Revis's contract.
Yeah, and very hard to figure out, you know, like how much he's going to cost and how you're going to keep everybody. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, Courtney's got to run, and Alex and I, before we let you go, too, and move on to Mackie and Judd with Rami, I want to ask you about Eli Manning getting benched and how we should look at Eli Manning's career. Let's wrap up on that note. When we return, you're listening to Purple Daily here on Score North.
Jonathan here with the Score North download. This download, powered by Modest Brewing Company, will remind you the countdown to the Medtronic Twin Cities Marathon weekend is on. If you're not running, be one of the 4,000 volunteers who will make this annual community jewel sparkle. Whether you help at the expo or on the course or even at the finish line, you'll find your efforts satisfying and appreciated. Visit tcmevents.org/volunteer to learn more and sign up. If you're going to the Twins game, check out Modest Brewing, located only 2 blocks from the Target Field station. Modest is known for serving a wide variety of one-of-a-kind, super drinkable craft beers. For their full menu or craft beers, go to modestbrewing.com. That's been your Score North download. Now back to Purple Daily.
Once upon a time, the NFL was tough, and the fullbacks wore neck rolls. Each week, we learn that the league hasn't gone soft, and for the player who demonstrated the most grit, we award the neck roll of the week.
Alex, did you just moan a little when you said neck roll?
Got so excited.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame you at all. It happens to me all the time. Back here on Purple Daily, Alex Boone, Matthew Collar, we have neck rolls to hand out, and then I want to ask you about Eli Manning. So, you want me to go first? You want to go first?
All right. I went first last. Actually, let's let Courtney go first.
Courtney had to step out, actually.
All right, well, then let's let you go first.
An article, so she was going to hand it out to Alexander Mattison for trucking that dude toward the end of the game.
That's fair.
I'm going to give it, now this is a little bit of a different one here, because I was going to go with another wide receiver tackle, because Julio Jones, after a pick, made a tremendous tackle, and I thought, that's a neck roll worthy tackle.
Fair.
I'm actually going to go with a different form of grit, different form of toughness, that wasn't someone slamming another guy to the ground, but instead metaphorically doing so, and I'm going to give it to Odell Beckham, because we made fun of him for his watch and everything else last week, quite a bit, but yeah. Greg Williams, who is a criminal and a doofus, said this week, decided he was going to be the smart guy who said that Odell Beckham is not a dynamic wide receiver. And Beckham made down the sideline a classic beautiful catch and then later took a slant to the house. And here's why I'm giving him the neck roll. Because the safety who was playing 6 miles deep, for whatever reason, Greg Williams likes to do that, the safety saw him coming and ran away. He was like, I'm going to get, no, he's going too fast. Nope. I'm going to get hurt there. And so if you can scare someone because you're going so fast and running violently into throwing themselves away from tackling you, neck roll for Odell Beckham.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I agree with all that, but okay. I like it. It sounded pretty. I mean, the guy wore a $2 million watch in pregame. I mean, you're just being ridiculous.
But he came back and he scared another human being into not tackling him and he shoved it in Greg Williams' face.
He definitely did. He definitely threw it right back in Greg Williams' face, especially because Greg was like, Odell, who? Like, dude, come
right,
on.
Right. So when you dunk on somebody like that, neck roll.
It's bad. Listen, I'm going to give mine to a guy who I thought stepped up big time this week. After a first week, I was really disappointed. Second week, I thought he put the team on his back, Le'Veon Bell. I thought that once that Trevor Siemian went down, he was like, you know what? I got this. You knew he was going to get the ball like 60 more times. But I thought he played tough, and I thought he ran over some people, and I thought at one point he jumped over a guy and ran through a guy, so I was like, you know what, that's definitely going to be my neck roll of the week.
All right, very good. Yeah, I mean, he did the best he could in that situation. It was a disaster. Well, also, to your guy, Frank Gore, who you love so much.
And love him.
Everyone who I've ever talked to loves Frank Gore. Delvin Cook worked out with Frank Gore this offseason, we found out.
No. You can't actually work out with Frank. Like, it's impossible. The dude is a machine. You can work around Frank.
Yeah, Delvin said he's always the last guy finished, no matter what it is.
Always.
So, so he attempted to work out with Frank Gore.
There you go.
At the goal line, the Bills gave Frank Gore the ball, and he just plowed a linebacker into the end zone for a touchdown. So, also an honorary neck roll to Frank Gore, which is probably a better selection than Odell, but I just loved anything that makes Greg Williams look bad is my favorite thing. So, Eli Manning is benched, and the Daniel Jones era begins. He'll play Daniel Jones against the Vikings in a couple of weeks here. Should we remember Eli Manning as having a couple of good years and being great in Super Bowls, or as a body of work, one of the better quarterbacks to ever play and a Hall of Famer? Which way would you look at it?
Dude, you absolutely have to give this dude his respects. I mean, I was off by like a week because I called that they would probably bench him 4 to 6 weeks in, just because what you show in 1 year, you're not magically going to get better. Like, that just doesn't happen all the time. Like, Tom Brady, he's never really dipped, right? Drew Brees, they never really dip. They just kind of stay at the same level. And then the minute they start to take, like, a little bit of a sink, they get out. We're done. We're good. Thanks for everything. We had a blast. But with poor Eli, I mean, everyone was like, well, it's the people around him. It's the defense. It's a lot of things. Listen, there's a lot of things you can get away with. I mean, the Colts played really, really good with a really, really good quarterback and an average team around him. Like, they fixed a lot of problems with guys that you had never heard of. So to me, that was kind of like the little silly excuse, and I was kind of fearful that he was going to come back and just be even worse, and it kind of did. So I wasn't as surprised as most people, but I think that you should remember the fact that he won 2 Super Bowls and that he was at one time a really good player, and he'll definitely get into the Hall of Fame just like his brother and dad.
Yeah, I think he does get into the Hall of Fame. And here's the thing that's a little bit challenging about Eli Manning and his career is that he's going to end up as a 500 quarterback. But from 2005 to 2012, which is, it takes him into his early 30s, he was 77-51 as a starter with 2 Super Bowl MVPs and 3 Pro Bowls in those years, and was one of the better starting quarterbacks in the NFL. He was never the best starting quarterback in the NFL, and he made a lot of risky passes and threw a lot of interceptions, but a lot of the numbers, if you look at like the QBR that factors in game situation for how you play, he was consistently a winning quarterback, making winning plays for 5, 6, 7 years in his career. It's just that at the end of his career, when the Giants organization seemed to fall apart, Tom Coughlin became no longer part of it. They brought in Ben McAdoo, who was kind of a joke. And then you know, they had one season where the roster was good, and it immediately fell apart. The last, 7 years, from 2013 to 2019, 38-59 as a starter. And it's not that his ability didn't deteriorate. It definitely did. But I think a major part of it, too, is that the organization fell apart as well around him, which really affected his overall final numbers.
Absolutely. And I think that trying to bring in Pat Shurmur was like their last chance that maybe we could redeem Eli's career. Because if you look at it, a lot of Pat's plays are, we need to get the ball into the playmaker's hands quickly. Like,
yeah.
It's very quarterback friendly. The ball gets out of your hands quickly. And if you can't work in this offense, dude, this is the end of the road. That's, I mean, to me, when you're looking back, and I know I'm getting like strung out on another story, but when you look back at this team that had Pat Shurmur as the OC and Casey Keenum at quarterback, losing those two guys, to me, destroyed this team because they are what made this offense good because you have dynamic players everywhere, and all these guys want to do is take shots. You just need to get them the ball quickly.
At some point, especially in Washington football team week, we will be discussing the Case Keenum question. We'll get there. Alex Boone, great stuff. Thanks to Courtney Carn. She had to run a few minutes early. Purple Daily, Alex, thanks. We'll be back on Thursday, man.
Matt, you're the best. Appreciate you.
All right. And I, of course, will be back tomorrow and every day here 2 to 4. Make sure you download it on iTunes if you haven't already. Give us the 5-star rating. Coming up next, Mackie and Judd with Rami here on Score North.
This holiday, whether you're making a Baker's Simple Truth turkey for 40 or a Murray's Baked Brie for 2, Baker's has fast, fresh delivery and free pickup, so you can make holiday meals that bring you all together to create memories that last. Baker's, fresh for everyone. Free pickup on orders of $35 or more. Restrictions may apply.
Get more ways to save at the Buy 5 or More Save $1 Each sale. Just buy 5 or more participating items and save $1 each with card. Baker's, fresh for everyone.